It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday the 19th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. There is a lot of debate happening right now about the transparency and accountability of policing after an officer shot and killed an unarmed man in Ferguson, Missouri. And part of the equation, whether we're talking video of events taken by citizens in recent days or even the now old TV show Cops, is about cameras. Some cities are starting to use so-called body-mounted cameras to record everything while a law enforcement person is on duty. Is self-surveillance the future of policing? Only if we can find a cheap way to store the data, as Marketplace's Queen Akim reports.
Video cameras and cloud storage are getting cheaper than ever. And so outfitting police with cameras should be easier than ever, right? Jennifer Lynch is an attorney with the civil liberties group, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And she says taking videos is the easy part. The hard part is managing the data.
What happens to the data after the fact? How long is it stored for? What's done with the data after an investigation has concluded?
Ann Lynch says if the video is being used as evidence, how do you secure it from hackers and establish a chain of custody? Jen King is with UC Berkeley School of Information, and she says putting those systems in place takes tech expertise and money, something many police departments are short on. Ann King says because of the sensitive nature of the videos, unlike a startup, public agencies can't always use off-the-shelf products.
It's not like they can just buy cloud space necessarily.
King says some jurisdictions won't allow public agencies to store information in the cloud, and so they have to maintain their own servers, which is another cost. I'm Queen Akim for Marketplace.
While much of the focus on Ferguson is about the technology and tactics being deployed by the police, a lot of focus has also been on social media. The original story of Mike Brown being shot and killed and the resulting protests and clashes with law enforcement has played out on Twitter in a big way over the last week, which had media and culture critic David Carr writing about it this week for The New York Times. David, thanks for talking with us.
A pleasure to be with you.
Why do you think this particular story developed the way it did in terms of coverage?
I think part of what goes on, if you think back to Occupy Wall Street, where the police were openly hostile to mainstream media coverage, were pushing cameras out of the area, I think a similar dynamic was underway in Ferguson, where it was difficult for the people that were on the ground to do their jobs. And Twitter ended up being a little bit of the eyes and ears. So in a sense, it served as a platform, a way to look at the action. Not comprehensive. You couldn't tell exactly what was going on.
Sure.
You knew something big was underway.
I was reporting on the Occupy movement, and so I remember how important social media was. But since then, we've seen stuff like Vine videos. We've seen Instagram. Do you think those kind of video capabilities have made a difference in terms of the Ferguson story?
I think when it comes to, as you know, as somebody who's covered these kind of events, you know, walking around with the camera is like walking around with an 800-pound pencil. You can be a target for either the police or the protesters, whereas if you have a phone, you're just like everyone else. But important, powerful work can get done on a smartphone.
Your piece talks a lot about Twitter. Why did you focus on Twitter more than other social networks, say Facebook?
Twitter is a lightweight bit of infrastructure that's able to carry information from other platforms, from Vine, from Instagram, in a way that is really quick, really fast, in a list form. And news, after all, is becoming more and more a list.
Your piece closes with this statement, nothing much good was happening in Ferguson until it became a hashtag. I just wonder if you might talk about that a little bit more.
The reason I wrote the ending the way I did is because I think that people thought, well, a young black male was shot by police in the middle of the country. That's an all too common story. But through the lens of Twitter, you were able to see that what this story was really about, at least on Wednesday and Thursday, was a middle American town that had militarized against a mostly unarmed protest group and was pointing sniper rifles at American citizens. And the coverage that ensued, the statement from the governor, the statement from the president, the inbound interest from so many media members stemmed in part from its visibility on Twitter.
David Carr writes the Media Equation column for The New York Times. David, thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure to be with you.
To say that as users we are skeptical of wearable technology might be a mild way of putting it. While fitness trackers have done well, smart watches and other items don't seem to have captured the attention of consumers just yet. But there might be one exception, the Moto 360. The smartwatch made by Motorola has been buzzed about for months, and Best Buy has now, perhaps by accident, spilled some of the beans. The electronics store's website posted a product page for the sleek-looking watch over the weekend, and people freaked out. Why is everyone so hyped about the 360? Our friend at CNET, Lindsay Turrentine, says it's a smartwatch that looks like a regular watch. And as consumers, we like that.
We're not ready to think of a watch as something different from what it's always been. And the first baby step toward wearing a digital watch is making something that we feel very comfortable with because we've seen it before.
Best Buy took down the page for the watch, but it seems like we might get a closer look in early September. Of course, Turrentine points out, even once we do, there's competition on the horizon.
Most people expect Apple to announce some version of a smartwatch later in the fall. It could be shortly on the heels of the Moto 360. It could be a few months later. Either way, whatever success Motorola has with the 360 may be short-lived if Apple produces something that grabs the attention of the world.
We'll keep you posted. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.